Welcome, everyone. Good morning, guten morgen, and buenos dias, all those things. All right, just to please him, anybody in here actually speak Japanese? Thought so. All right.
You do.
All right. My name is Jose Rivera, software engineer at Red Hat, team member of the Samba team, and I'll be talking to you today about my project Storhaug. If you were at my talk last year, this will seem incredibly familiar, but there will be some different things. A year has passed. So let's start. Who am I? I've been working with Microsoft protocols for about 9-ish years now, give or take. I even wrote some of the definitive documentation that is currently being used today. Although hopefully it'll be phased out once, you know, SMB1 is no longer being used. Right, guys? 2 years on the Samba team have yet to run away screaming. And despite this picture, I have never actually driven a motorcycle. This is my first experience on a motorbike. And I'm glad to say I did not actually drive it, since I'm still alive because of it. All right. So this is the rough layout of the presentation. We'll be going over a little bit of history. Given that I covered this last year and most of you are already familiar with CTDB, I'll only touch it briefly and say what was the impetus for all this work that I'm doing. And then I'll show you the integration work that I've been doing since then, what it's taken to get CTDB and Samba to play nice with others, and what others were playing nice with. And then a little status update, since this is technically presentation 2. All right, starting off on the same page, here's some basic terminology we should all be relatively familiar with. Should I move over this way? Will that help things? All right, let's see here. Volume. Okay. Do we not? Okay. Okay, there we go. So, high availability is the key one here. Yeah, I think most of you will know what most of this is, but just to be sure, it's a characteristic of a clustered system which says that the system as a whole can be reliably used with minimum downtime. Oh, much better. Especially in the term of a clustered system, that means that failover will happen relatively reliably and quickly, so that an end user using a clustered system will detect no significant absence of service, despite the usual network blips that they're used to. And then we have active. Yep. Okay, we're good. Act 1, a brief history. So why did CTDB come about? Samba, we needed a way to serve the same data from multiple nodes at the same time. That's pretty much what it was. It helps to spread the computing load, the computing and traffic load over multiple nodes as opposed to having to buy continuously bigger and bigger hardware. All the usual reasons we need clusters. We like using clusters. But due to the era that it was coming up in, CTDB had to provide a number of other functions that Samba couldn't rely would be available on all operating systems that it was installing. So apart from just having a distributed database system, it also provided a common identity for all Samba instances. The synchronization of SMBN/Windows metadata, which is one of its biggest functions to date, and cross-node messaging so that they could talk to each other about membership and leadership election and such. In 2012, CTDB version 2.0 was released. Finally, this started a long and ongoing road towards modularization. Thank you, Amitai and Martin. Your work has been invaluable to my progress. Where are we going? All right. Well, modularization facilitates integration. This allows for individual components of CTDB to be turned off without disrupting the complete functionality of CTDB. Some of this was already present prior to CTDB 2.0, but the modification of these systems is now is steadily becoming easier over the years. This eases integration into other clustered environments as long as we provide the features that CTDB was providing elsewhere. And, well, I said, why not integrate all this into a fully open source Linux-based clustered environment? Note the logo. So that's where we are today. Now I'm going to talk about what it took to get all this integrated, starting with the top. Introducing Storhaug. Storhaug, formerly Storage HA, is a high availability provider for Linux-based clustered storage systems. Man, it sounds fancy when I say that. Its main goal is to simplify the setup and configuration of a storage cluster. The idea being that a storage cluster should be fairly agnostic to both the data it's serving and how it's serving it. My idea being that I want to access this data through whatever means me or my clients want to access it. And the framework for getting all that put together should be relatively unobtrusive. And its aim was also to provide, in the case of Samba, many of the non-database features of CTDB. Leadership election, cluster membership management, things like that. And it's mostly just a big pile of shell scripting. You'll note here that Storhaug roughly means big pile in Norwegian. Incidentally, the main reason is because I took storage HA and tried to find the first word I could think of that I could find on the internet. So store HA, yeah, you get it. And here's what some of the command line looks like. I know it's a bit tiny, but over in the upper right, you'll see the help message that comes out from storhaug.h-h. It's got a couple simple commands. Obviously, prior to this, you'll want to do some configuration, which you'll see on the left. This configuration file should just be locked down to root access only because we do some silly things right now, like store a plain text password. But that'll be coming out in later. That'll be changed in later versions. The amount of configuration we expect is fairly minimal above what you should already be doing for your storage access methods. So if you want to use Samba, you should obviously have a sane and working smb.conf for a clustered setup. If you want to use NFS, well, you should be configuring a clustered NFS service. And once you have all those configured, you can throw references to those files into a configuration file like this, and then just run Storhaug setup, for instance. And it should basically just start putting together the clustered infrastructure for you. But how does it do this? Well, welcome to Pacemaker. Storhaug's main workhorse, Pacemaker, is a flexible and extensible high availability resource manager. In this case, a resource is defined via what it calls a resource agent, and resource agents can be defined as just about anything, from storage volumes to IP addresses, including daemon processes. And Pacemaker takes care of centrally managing all those things from a single interface, either from any node within the Pacemaker cluster or from a remote management node. So you get the same view no matter where you are as long as you're pointing to the right cluster. Resources and nodes can have automated logging of and recovery from failures. And again, it's extremely configurable. So for example, over on the left here, I have the output of PCS resource, PCS being the modern Pacemaker command line. And this shows you all the resources I have running on a standard Storhaug cluster, which include, let's see here, a couple Gluster volumes at the top called CTDB lock and Ganesha state, the actual CTDB process resource, the Samba group resource, which includes SMB, NMB, SMB, NMBD, and WinBind, and NFS Ganesha, as well as a couple virtual IP addresses, or public IPs, as they're calling CTDB. Over on the upper right there, you can see the the parameters that I've used to define a CTDB resource. And it's really just a matter of, okay, if you're familiar with CTDB at all, there is a CTDB wrapper script out there that we use to facilitate things like systemd calling into CTDB. This kind of replicates a lot of the work that was in CTDB wrapper, but it's meant to be used throughout multiple systems. So, specifically, it's meant to be used via pacemaker as opposed to systemd or service. So, a couple things had to change on the inside, but overall, it takes roughly the same parameters. And now this is really tiny. However, this is just an example of what a big pile of scripting it is on the inside. Let's see, what is this one? Up here we have the start function, and this is largely taken from CTDB wrapper with a couple OCF/pacemaker things thrown in there. And then, you know, make sure that the persistent databases can get set up, do a proper sysconfig, logging stuff, and then public addresses just right at the bottom, being cut off a bit. I continue it on the right-hand side, where, here we go. We generate the public addresses and nodes files. So we don't actually provide those by hand, but we generate those from the configuration we've passed into Pacemaker via Storehaug. This allows us to do a couple things, like we can regenerate the public addresses and nodes file as we change the configuration in Pacemaker. And then we run the binary with all those options thrown in there. So yeah, this makes it, you know, it's a little obfuscated because we have to pass things in through variables and whatnot, but it makes it relatively easy to figure out what's going on if you know your way around shell scripting, and makes it really extensible. Here we have, in much bigger text, the CTDB resource resource definition, there we go. And here I just pass in a couple default variables. This has changed slightly since I actually took the screenshot. I pass in a lot more variables these days, so you can configure it more easily. Things to note of interest, there's op monitor there towards the middle that has a timeout of that has an interval of 10 and a timeout of 30. That means that the monitor pacemaker will monitor CTDB, i.e. run the monitor operation we've defined in the CTDB resource agent, every 10 seconds, and it has a timeout, at least here, of 30 seconds. I believe the default is something like 60. So these parameters can be, you know, tweaked to your benefit, As I get more people testing with this and figuring out what works for them, I can just set different default values and maybe expose them through configuration variables. Yes.
Was it easy to check that it's alive?
I can look at that in a bit here.
One question.
Yes. Yes.
Create like complicated symbols file, and you mentioned that it could be has the advantage you can regenerate it depending on changes of the pacemaker configuration, right?
Yeah.
So, but of course, this has to be done carefully. So, just like that, changing nodes, I mean, public address is not the issue, but for nodes, changing the number of nodes in the CTDB cluster is something that would be very helpful.
Oh, yes.
So, that's taken into account.
It's taken into account in that the system administrator needs to be wary of the fact that he's about to shut down CTDB service for, you know, a couple seconds. Unfortunately, yes.
Yes. Okay,
that's the point.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that.
No, just be like... Oh, sweet.
Does the consistency checks and you just need to take away nodes, shut them down, do the logo file on the other nodes.
Oh, that's perfect. You'll see why towards the end. Oh, that's perfect. All right. And then same thing for start and stop. Now, the interesting line is the dash dash clone there, because what this says is that I've only defined one resource from this resource agent. However, the clone tells it that there will be more than one copy of this resource going around. And that each of these, let's see, interleave means that it should, let's see, if I remember correctly, interleave means that it should go to every node in the cluster, at least that meets the requirements that you see down there. And globally unique means that, let's see, if globally unique were true, it would mean that each instance of CTDB would be would represent completely separate logical entities. Given that CTDB itself is a clustered agent, I specify that globally unique equals false, and Pacemaker takes care of making sure that things sort of happen either synchronously or always in the same order, depending on how you've configured it. If globally unique were true, it would just start, you know, treating all of them as completely separate processes that don't talk to each other in any way, and just like, oh, I'm just going to shut this one down and not take care of monitoring the other ones. That's one example of the things it does differently. And as I mentioned earlier, I have a couple constraints of where the resource should be co-located. Obviously, it should have access to its recovery lock volume for now. And it should not be started before the recovery lock volume is actually active and running. All right. So we defined a resource agent for CTDB, and now we have to figure out how to get it to stop doing all the things it wants to do. Well, it just takes a coffee break. Basically, you can configure CTDB by simply not telling it to do the things we usually recommend use how to do by default. So if you don't configure a public addresses file, it won't try to manage virtual IP addresses. If you don't tell it to manage Samba or Winbind, it won't try to check that those processes are running. So that basically takes care of the majority of the things that we actually needed to do. Took me a couple days to get to this, but once I got my hat tip from Herr Adam over there, things worked out pretty smoothly. Now, filling in the gaps. We've taken away a lot of things from CTDB and Samba that Samba would really like to see. This is inadequate. But do not fret, Mr. Snuggleton. We just need to define a few more resources. Here we have a definition or definitions for virtual IP management, or using the resource agent IP adder 2. And you just give it, you know, an IP address, tell it to flush its routes anytime the IP address changes, monitor it every such seconds. And based on the constraints that we add to it, which I don't include on this slide, Pacemaker will simply take care of making sure this IP address is available on a machine that meets its requirements. And it will do its best to sort of evenly distribute this resource relative to other IP adder 2 resources throughout the cluster. Down in the bottom left, we see the daemon management for SMB, NMB, and Winbind. Do I have Winbind in there? No, I do not. So that got added later. And we just, similar to how we define CTDB, but slightly simpler since they don't need too much reconfiguration on the system end, we define start, stop, and monitor. Then I just lump them together into a single group because I don't really have any need in my storage system to run them independent of each other or without one another. So you just throw them in a group and you co-locate that group and you set constraints accordingly. And finally, at this point, we can start defining other services which will be managed by Pacemaker, like NFS Ganesha. So I took this snapshot here because it's also very similar to what we do with CTDB. So there you have the shared state volume defined at the top. And this is taken from yesterday, so it's slightly more accurate. This is what I was looking for. All right, so we mount FS type GlusterFS. I'm using Gluster for the time being. Its clone line is slightly more interesting because we have interleave true again, But we also have clone max, which specifies the maximum number of clones that I want to have running in my pacemaker cluster. And in this case, I've defined a special role, as you can see by the sort of constraint immediately under the shared state volume, that any particular node in the pacemaker cluster can be defined as a storage node. By default, all nodes are defined as storage nodes, but StoreHog does allow you to have non-storage nodes in the cluster for, like, you know, management of the other nodes or something like that. So you define you define which nodes are storage nodes. It calculates the number of them and then sets the max number of clones there with the location constraint right underneath it. It tells this volume to only be accessed, basically, from a storage node. Then below that, you have the NFS Ganesha daemon resource definition, which again is not globally unique. And then we constrain it to be co-located with its state volume and make sure that it doesn't start until the state volume is already active. That's it. I mean, it's a, you know, giant wrapped line mess of code, but overall it's not too long once you get it all figured out. All right, in short demo, I doubt I'll get this to work today, but we'll see. All right, actually, I'll leave that for the end and just go on to what I've been doing recently and where I'm planning to go from here. All right, recent development. It played nice with Vagrant Ansible. The project contains a Vagrant and Ansible configuration to allow users to quickly deploy a sample VM cluster of StoreHog. For those that aren't aware, Vagrant is a system that aims to facilitate or to sort of abstract away the entire concept of creating VMs. You download a pre-configured box for either, you know, libvirt or VirtualBox or LXC or something, and then on top of that, Vagrant will take care of creating new virtual machines based on that central box image. And it can do all sorts of things on the system level. It doesn't require anything to be pre-configured on the from the box. It doesn't require you to install any additional things. Although if you're trying to make your own box, then, you know, there's a number of things you have to do to set up a couple things that Vagrant expects, like a default username and proper or improper SSH access to any clones of that VM, et cetera. Ansible is a tool for automating deployment of machines, be they virtual or real. In my case, I'm using it both to deploy these VMs after I set them up from Vagrant, and also to update the configuration, because Ansible is basically just a system that defines a set of rules that should be true for these machines that you're setting up, and then Ansible just checks to make sure that they're true, and if they're not, adjusts the system so that these rules are true. So a simple example would be, this directory should exist with these permissions on it. If it doesn't, Ansible will try to create it. If it can, it'll try to set its permissions. If it can, you're good. If it can't, fix it. All right. So that got all put together within the last year or so, and my demo is a bit reliant on it, so I'm going to have to see what I broke about it recently. Improving integration with NFS Ganesha. All right. Last year, I did have some manner of integration with Ganesha, but I didn't have a couple things right. In particular, I streamlined the configuration of the shared state volume thanks to some great work with Martin Schrenke back there. That is going a lot better now these days. I now properly trigger NFS Grace when an IP address moves. And I'm slightly less Red Hat about where the configurations go, so I don't automatically assume that everything lives in etc sysconfig. And then currently, the main thing I'm working on is adding new nodes to the cluster at runtime. This is that magic bit I was talking about where It will populate and distribute resources to the new node as needed. If it's a storage node, obviously, it will spin up CTDB, Samba, and Ganesha on that node. And with the work that Martin just mentioned, should go relatively smoothly. This feature is currently in tech preview. And once I get that one down and a couple other things I'll just show you, Storehug 1.0 is just around the corner. So what am I thinking of doing in the near term? Well, I'd like to start managing the storage volumes, or at least monitor their status. Right now, I simply assume that the storage will be there. If I can't mount it, I fail. But I'd like to be able to at least check the status from the storage directly so that I don't have to fail when trying to mount it, necessarily. And then maybe, you know, be able to start and stop any local daemons that the storage requires. And, oh yeah, I don't even mount it right now. I just check to make sure that the mount point exists. Develop a new TickleAct implementation for Pacemaker. The current implementation, yes? Right. So, yeah, that.
Do you really want to get into that business? I mean, you have to, but it's.
Do I want to? Do I have to? Yeah, the answer to these things are different. So, TickleX. There is a current implementation of TickleX in Pacemaker, but it's as a side feature of the port block resource agent. Yeah, it took me a while to find that one. Once you figure it out, it makes sense because what port block is intended to do is that it's supposed to tie in with an IP address movement or sysadmin management or sysadmin intervention. That when the IP address moves, port block is set to just block a defined series of ports, and then once it settles where it's supposed to go, you unblock them. So it has a tickle feature. So that just before you unblock it, it tickles any connections that were active before the IP address moved. Yeah.
Two questions. First, when the node goes completely down, do you tickle the IP address that has been taken over on the new node? And second question, follow up is, how do you get the contract information across?
That's why I want a new implementation. Because currently, all they do is they do a netstat every 5 or 10 seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Right. So my thinking is that why not use contract D, IP tables, to just keep state of the IP tables configure of the live IP tables as the cluster is going. I'm not sure. Contract D is by, let's see if I remember the naming correctly, is from NetFilter. Yeah. So that yeah, I think that's contract D. I believe that's contract D, yes. Yeah, because in contract D, you don't just necessarily keep track of the entire IP table state. You can define which sorts of connections you're listening for, and you really don't have to care necessarily about the ongoing changing state of the connections themselves. What you care about is what the state was when the node died. Basically, Martin.
Yeah, I'm going to redo CTDB's TickleAct implementation too, so that's part of it.
Woo!
Yeah, I mean, contract D or similar, and the connection is a password replicated database, and then pull them out on the other node.
Basically.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, CTDB, which has replicated databases, does tickle distribution or its connection information distribution.
Yep. So that's kind of where I'm thinking of going with it. oddly, one of my first stumbling blocks here is, where do I put it? Like, do I create a new resource agent for this and then hope people know how to use it? Do I integrate it into IP Adder 2, possibly creating a new IP Adder 3? Part of the issue with all this is that the Cluster Labs people, the people behind Pacemaker, are really, really gung-ho about the notion that people need to write really dumb resource agents, that any single resource agent should do as little as possible so that they can more reliably stack resource agents on top of each other and be able to manage the logic behind it. Several resource agents don't adhere to this philosophy, shall we say, IP Adder 2 being one of them. So, And then, natively, just out-of-the-box support more file systems. Again, because of my logo in the bottom right-hand corner. Things like GFS2 or CephFS. By the way, be sure to catch the presentation by Ira Cooper immediately after this one in the other room. All right, and that's it thus far. Thank you so much. Jeremy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So just a second, so we can use the microphone for the questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So like I said, you don't have a product, you got a kit of parts. How much work? So you know what you know what people want, he says, inventing what people want. They want cluster in a box.
Sure.
Right? Cluster in a big box or cluster in. So you pick up the phone, you say, deliver to my data center a storage cluster with 10 nodes, 50 petabytes of storage, and I'm going to manage it all by this web interface.
Sure.
And that means that the logging for when everything blows up and goes wrong, which it will do because it has way too many moving parts, needs to go somewhere where the web interface can look at it and they can mail it to Red Hat support going, help, it's all broken, what did I do wrong?
Sure.
So how close are you to being able to do a product like that? Because it looks, you've got all the bits. Mm-hmm. It looks like it just needs all the integration work, which is, the last 90% of the 10% you need to finish.
So the last 10% takes 90% of the
time. What do you think it would take to actually create that cluster in a box product?
Let's see. Cluster in a box. The biggest hurdle for that would, of course, be a proper web interface. And that's out of my scope. I heard a draft. So I think I can do within the scope of what I'm aiming for this project is to make sure I use not simultaneous multiple standard locations, but just, don't start putting log files into, special custom locations under like userlib or something. Just make sure I put them in the right places, depending on the distribution that's installing this, obviously, and be as conformant as possible to what other systems expect so that they can just pick these things up and display the log files, for instance, or like if somebody comes up with a cool web interface for all this, I can just write a simple plugin for parsing my log files. More or less. My intention for at least either 1.0 or 2.0 is that you could actually use this to set up, if not a virtual, not just a virtual machine storage cluster, an actual storage cluster if you just take Vagrant out of the equation and use Ansible, you could use this to deploy Storehog on actual machines and get it running.
So basically though, what you've done here is you've set things up in such a way that someone who wanted to do a startup could say, oh, it can be done, so I just need to take all these ideas and put them into packages, into, you know, presentations, whatever.
Sure. I mean, it's open source.
Any of the
NASA is good. Oh, yeah. The other thing that's missing is one thing I mentioned earlier, which would be the sort of the management of storage volumes, just really getting into that business so that...
You ditched the NFS.
Yeah, well, last year's talk was called Playing Nice with Others, so I might as well try. Yeah. All right. Anything else?
Yes.
What?
You said you wanted to refer the demo on Thursday.
Yes. It's the end. Yes. How much time do I got?
Well, since it's 5 minutes left, I think we can, if you can do it in 5 minutes, we
have
time for
that. If I can do it. All right, let's see what I can do here. This one? Yes, look at all this nice red text. All right. This is output from Yum. Isn't it great? Yeah. What broke? Come on. What broke? Come on. All right. Let's see. Project dependencies are installed. No such file directory. Okay.
No demo.
No demo, I guess. No, it doesn't look like it. No. Only if I ignore them. I can't ignore these ones, though. I mean, you know, oh, insecure world writable directory. Yeah, whatever. Okay. Do I still have internet connectivity? Is a good question. Yes.
You have to reset your
Nope. No demo yet. All right. For anyone that's interested, I'll be working on this during the day, and you can find me afterwards, and I can give a personal demo on that. I will, but not while this thing is plugged in. All right.
Okay, then thanks, Jose.